Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community and of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf. How about a cold one on the patio during a nice spring day? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the GM Shuffle.
What is the cost benefit of Bodell? What are we really getting? I think the difference is you think, well, we're getting an experienced player. Well, great. But to me, what are the benefits of it? What are, you know, is he going to work hard? Is he going to make sure the team's aligned? I mean, those are things you got to ask yourself when you're putting the team together. Like, will this become a distraction? Will he get in the huddle and want the football?
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. As always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos, as always, as the GM Shuffle has returned from the Sunshine State. Michael back from Tallahassee. I'm back from Tampa. Michael, how was the weekend? How did it treat you? It feels like we missed some stuff in the NFL. We had a Tom Brady roast last night that I still need to get to fully. There's a whole lot that's been going. I've only seen certain clips. I haven't watched it in its entirety. I got back late last night, but I'm going to watch it later on this afternoon after I get back from work here.
I would hope you would. I mean, you must have sweat through about 4,000 suits when you were down there. I mean, with the humidity in Tampa, oh, my God. I didn't watch any of it yet. I've kind of been on that. Diet of no Patriot news. But, I mean, I've seen some of the things on Twitter. It sounded like they were having some fun. I mean, it didn't sound politically correct, but that's a good thing, right? I mean, sometimes, you know, we need to make fun of ourselves, right? I mean, sometimes it's good to make laugh at yourself, you know, and so and not get people all offended by it. So, yeah, I mean, it was good. It was good to see Belichick there. It was good to see Brady. Kraft was there. I mean, the Gronkmeister, Edelman, I heard was sensational. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. I mean, but the weekend in Florida is always good. My niece graduated. Our niece graduated from Florida State.
Yeah, great to her,
Michelle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great achievement. She grew up in Panama and came here and achieved a tremendous success. So it was wonderful to watch her do that and see all the graduates. Had a good commencement speaker. You know, that's the key is you go into those things, right? You know, and you want somebody who was a good commencement speaker or somebody at least give a good message.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that was good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Long day, though, man.
They always are. So it was an afternoon because I remember my college graduation was like first thing in the morning, which is one of the reasons why I probably don't even remember the commencement speaker, which is probably my bad after what we did the night previously. But it was always a lot of fun on that graduation day. And then you go off and you try to make the most of your life. So congratulations to Michelle for graduating. I wrapped up wedding season for myself. I mean, three weddings in a month. It was my wedding, then a buddy's wedding last weekend in San Diego, then a wedding this weekend in Tampa. So wedding season's now officially over for myself, but it was a whole lot of fun to see some old friends and people that have been here on the VSiN network here. Evan Klosky, he's our Bucks guy. He was the one that got married. So it was nice to go catch up with him and go ahead and see some old friends that I met in Spokane way back when, where I met my wife Liz. So it was a nice little Spokane reunion for us down there in Tampa. But sweat through a lot of suits. The dry cleaning bill will be expensive, but it's what you do to sacrifice for the ones that you love. So fun weekend. It's good to be back, though, here in the saddle. And we'll give our full thoughts on this. You got to watch the Brady roast. I'm going to watch it. That'll be our homework for the GM Shuffle. We can report back and give our full thoughts on Thursday.
I actually, you know, I was down this, I'm down this rabbit hole on JFK and this guy, Bryant. Yeah. Well, they had this guy, Bryant. Yeah. Shocking. Right. And Millie like looks at me like, are you kidding me? I'm like, yeah, no, I'm down. And so they had this guy, Bryant Edwards, who's a tactical specialist. He was a police officer in Lawrence. He's written a couple books. behind the picket fence. And then he wrote another book about Roscoe White, who he believes is the shooter, one of the shooters. And he was basically presenting a case. You know, this Allen Library in outside of Dallas, they get some incredibly good speakers and they put them up online. And, you know, and so he was in there presenting all the evidence with just pictures, just looking at pictures. And I learned so much. Like, I had no idea that the sidewalk on the grassy knoll side was painted yellow on the bottom and the top in certain areas. And so basically what this guy presented was with these pictures, and you see it, that was the kill zone. And so for the shooters, they knew when they saw that yellow that the subject was in the kill zone. It's fascinating. But anyway, that's not here today. We had bigger news than that, because Odell, oh my God, Odell signed. Have you slept since Odell has been a free agent?
I got the notifications at the airport Thursday when I was just running through. I'm like, oh, Odell signed with the Miami Dolphins, 1 year deal worth up to $8.25 billion. Has to hit a lot of incentives to go ahead and get that. But Odell now in Miami with the Dolphins, and hey, maybe this tilts the scale in their favor in the AFC East. Could this put them over the edge here? But Odell Beckham Jr. now resurfacing with the Dolphins in that offense with Mike McDaniel, Tua, and the rest of the crew.
It's amazing that a guy that made the one catch has had this kind of public relations career more than he's had an NFL career. Like, there's actually people, I thought I heard this on the Worldwide Leader, that think he belongs in the Hall of Fame. Like, he's not even in, like, he wouldn't make it to the top 100 candidates of, I mean, first of all, Sterling Sharp can't get in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Then he's got no chance to get in the Hall of Fame. I mean, if Sterling Sharp, I mean, like, this is not even, like, this is the biggest problem we have in sports, is understanding what's good and understanding what's great. And we keep thinking this guy is great, you know, and he makes a great catch. He's had great catches. I'm not saying he hasn't had a great career, but his career is similar to, actually, as of this point right now, it's similar to Dez Bryant's career. You know, Dez Bryant played in 119 games. Mm-hmm. You know, he started 99. Beckham started 97. They both, I mean, Dez had 537 catches. This guy's got 566. I mean, Dez was 7,506 yards. This guy's got 7,900 yards. Dez has 75 touchdowns, and this guy's 59. So do you think Dez is a Hall of Famer? I mean, this is the most amazing thing. I really think when we talk about these receivers all the time, I would love for people to give out a definition of what is a number one receiver in the NFL. Like, what is that? Like, if I, not that I'm ever going back in the league, but if I ever were back in, if I was a scouting director or a personnel guy, I would basically say, I want you to write down what a number one receiver is. Mm-hmm. And unless you can tell me this guy's a number one receiver, we can't draft him in the first round. If you put that criteria around it. Now, I'm not saying Beckham was a blown pick. I'm not. I mean, Beckham proved to be a really good player, but he has durability issues and all those things. Yeah. But the PR around him is bigger than the pitcher itself. Like, I don't know why you would waste $3 million on Odell, because you've got basically, wouldn't you be better off with anybody over there? Because Tyreek's going to get the double coverage. Waddle's going to get the coverage. Who's ever going to be over there is going to be one-on-one against the third corner or the fourth corner. That guy should be able to win.
Yeah. No, I think Odell Beckham Jr., I think, is one of those fascinating cases of making a really good first impression has really carried him throughout his career. Because, like, his first 3 years were really productive, 1,300 yards plus in both of those years, double-digit touchdowns. But it's been nowhere close to that sort of production ever since 2016. Last I checked, we're in 2024. Michael Lombardi, like, it's been a long time. And we always say, yeah, hey, remember when is the lowest form of conversation, as our buddy Tony Soprano once put it. And I think there's a lot of remember when it comes to Odell Beckham Jr. And, like he's, like, this isn't to say that he shouldn't be on an NFL team. And, I yeah, it's good for him to continue your career. But it's like, he's just not the guy that warrants the headlines that he typically gets. But I guess here we are. We're talking about it as well. But it's kind of more so setting the record straight on what should be the requirements.
I mean, look, he's back to where the boat journey started. So maybe he can organize a boat. But look, I think, to me, and I really believe this in my heart, I think, as if you're the GM of the Miami Dolphins, or you're the GM of the New Orleans Saints, or you're the GM of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, The venue, the area, Atlanta, and we'll get to them later. Atlanta, you got to be really careful about what players you bring that love football and don't love football, because there's a lot of tantalizing stuff to do in Miami. And if you've got money like all these kids have, you can do a lot of different things. And football becomes a back burner. And to beat Buffalo, to beat Kansas City, to beat some of these good teams in the AFC, Miami's going to need to have this kind of unbelievable, unified, all we care about is winning. Yeah. And I think every distraction, the cost benefit of this, what is the cost benefit of Bodell? What are we really getting? You know, I mean, I think the difference is you think, well, we're getting an experienced player. Well, great. But to me, what are the benefits of it? What are, you know, is he going to work hard? Is he going to make sure the team's aligned? I mean, those are things you got to ask yourself when you're putting the team together. Like, will this become a distraction? Will he get in the huddle and want the football? You know, like, I just think to me, it's like, you know, of course, it sounds great. You make the world ticker on that. I mean, I was in Tallahassee. You thought the world came to an end because Odell signed. Oh, my God. It's like, geez, are you kidding me?
The notifications were buzzing. 35 receptions last season with the Baltimore Ravens, 565 yards, 3 touchdowns, started 6 games, played in 14. Dealt with those injuries. Like you said, durability is a concern, and that's the concern for him now. He's just a year older.
I mean, that's one of the worst contracts Baltimore's ever gotten. I'm sure Baltimore regrets that tremendously. Now, they'll probably say, and maybe this is true, they'll probably say we needed to do that to get Lamar back, which maybe that's the case. Okay. So basically you spend an extra, let's say you spend an extra $15 million to get, wouldn't you have been better off just giving Lamar the $15 million?
You would think.
I mean, right?
I'm sure Lamar would like the $15 million,
right? Like, why not, right? Like, let's give him the $15 million. So I don't know. I mean, to me, it's constantly how he keeps talking about this all the time and how he's going to tilt the meter. But we spent way too much time talking about him anyway.
Let's talk about how to develop some rookie quarterbacks. As we'll carry this conversation into the next segment, since we have a couple minutes left here in this segment. But this is something that you really wanted to highlight as we start to begin these rookie camps. And there's interesting that there's quarterbacks like Caleb Williams, that's going to be a day one starter. Jaden Daniels, I would assume, is going to be a day one starter. But then you have your group of the Knicks, McCarthy, and May. I would put Knicks into that camp as well, as probably going to be a day one starter, but needs to go out there and prove himself. I guess, how do teams go about doing this from day one? Because that's what you talked about earlier. The development process begins right now to get them ready to play week one in September.
Well, development starts for every position, right? There has to be a plan, and you never hear about the plan. You only hear about the drafting of the player. You never hear about how do we make this player a good thing. And if you're the leader of an organization, like you're Terry Super Bowl winning GM Fontenot, you lead the organization. Here's the issue I have as I thought about this taking walks. Like, Zach Robinson becomes a major player in this decision. Because if they lose Zach Robinson to a team, and I'm not sure Zach Robinson can become a head coach or he's a great complete, you know, can develop talent. But if he walks away, where does that leave? Where does that leave the development of Michael Penix? It's not going to affect Kirk Cousins at all, right? But what's going to happen is how we're developing this player is attached to the organizational values of player development. And that's where we have a fallacy and we have a fall short entity, because there is no Fontenot, Super Bowl winning GM Fontenot, he has no plan. He just is giving the player to the coaches. And when you do that, all of a sudden the margin of error opens up really wide. We'll talk about this more in the second half, but I think to me, this is probably the hardest factor that teams don't consider.
Yeah, I mean, we know continuity is a big deal in development, and sometimes these coaches, the carousel is always buzzing in the National Football League. We'll continue this more on the other side. We'll take a quick break, though. This is the GM Shuffle. All right, anytime you're on the golf course, you always hear the phrase, hit it long and hit it straight. Well, as somebody who's a novice to the game of golf, a new person, I wanted to make sure I had the best equipment possible. So as a novice golfer, I went and hit up our friends over at PXG because they have an all-new driver called the Black Ops. I mean, my man Chris over in Henderson has hooked me up with a phenomenal driver that's built to my game, my new game that doesn't really do much of anything on the course, but it has what I need in terms of the club head speed and the kind of grip that I need to go out there and be the best to my ability. I mean, this is music to ears to any golfer, whether you're a novice like myself or if you've been playing the game for decades. The PXG Black Ops driver is a breakthrough in driver technology. It's a complete and total victory in golf club engineering, unlike anything you've ever seen before. Black Ops drivers are adjustable to deliver a combined MOI of 10,000 plus for unreal forgiveness. That's just ridiculously high. So what you got to do, go check out the PXG Black Ops driver. You'll be as impressed with it as I am. Learn more and get free shipping on all equipment at pxg.com/gmshuffle and use code GMshuffle at checkout. That's pxg.com/gmshuffle, code GMshuffle for free shipping on all equipment, pxg.com/gmshuffle, code GMshuffle. So we're talking about developing these rookies as rookie minicamps start to begin here in this coming week, and especially these quarterbacks. We wanted to hone in on those guys since we saw six go in those first 12 picks. I guess in your experience, when you've watched how teams have developed guys, what is something that really works across the board, and what's something that doesn't work that you've seen, and kind of the difference between successful careers and unsuccessful careers, especially at the quarterback position?
Well, it's stability, right? So Andy Reid takes Patrick Mahomes and he brings him in. He's got Alex Smith to play. So Andy spends a whole year working on the mechanics of the position for Patrick Mahomes in the offense. Then he works on the fundamentals for the offense. And then he develops his skill set in the classroom. Then he develops his skill set on the field. And he's got plenty of time to do it because, remember, when Reed's running the offense, he had Bieniemy there with him, and he had other coach to coach the backup player. Mm-hmm. So you almost need two staffs. And my point about Zach Robinson is Zach is going to be spending most of his time with Kirk Cousins, 80% of the time with Cousins, getting him ready to go. But who's teaching Penix how to become a pro? Right now, Penix is an amateur. And to become a pro, he has to become and develop. He has to get this, and he has to work on mechanics, fundamentals, classroom, on the field. And then how much time is allotted for that, right? And then if something changes, if they leave, like this isn't going to be a problem for Bo Nix because Sean Payton's not getting fired. Mm-hmm. It's probably not going to be a problem for J.J. McCarthy because he's got Josh McCown there and Kevin O'Connell's going to be the head coach. So the system of offense isn't going to change. But because of the subcontractor rule in terms of hiring a head coach, Raheem Morris isn't walking into the offensive staff room saying, okay, here are the mechanics for the position. Here's the fundamentals for the position. Here's how, I mean, neither is Gerard Mayo. Mayo's got 27 people on his coaching staff. He's not walking in there saying to the offense, it's Alex Van Pelt and Ben McAdoo who are doing it. They're, mm-hmm. He's just in charge of putting signs up on the wall and talking about other things. He's not running the day-to-day operation of the team. And so when you don't have that, now the player development gets lost. The player development gets subjected to the coach. And this is where Al Davis would say all the time, don't let the coaches become general managers, because now they start evaluating whether the player can be developed, right? Now they start to evaluating, is this guy good enough? Are we wasting our time? When we all know sometimes coaches give up on players. I mean, think about it. You know, we just watched the finals. We watched the NBA basketball and, you know, Shea Alexander's a great player. They traded him for Paul George. Well, they needed Paul George to sign Kawhi Leonard, but if they just would have waited, maybe Alexander would have been better than everybody. But you know how impatient people get. And so coaches particularly, not all coaches are great evaluators. I know that doesn't sound right to most fans, but that's the case, and they don't recognize the talent. And so when you don't have somebody, like it's one thing to be a subcontractor as a head coach, then you should be in charge of player development. Then you should be in charge of, okay, I'm in charge of the scout team. I'm in charge of all these things. Because somebody's got to watch over the player development. It ain't going to be Super Bowl winning GM Terry Fontenot. He just handed the player to Raheem. You think he came after they drafted him? You think he presented on a piece of paper the actual game plan on how we're going to develop Michael Penix? That's his job, but he's not going to do it. because then he would be stepping on the coach's toe. And do you think it's entered his mind that who do we have behind Zach Robinson? Okay, do we have – oh, we got Kenny Zampese. Well, Kenny Zampese's been – you know, like he could go to another job in a moment. Like they're all just mercenary soldiers. Like who is institutionally putting in the fundamentals that are needed for the Atlanta Falcons to last 4 to 5 years? See, this is what's missing. That's part of being a general manager, right? And so one of the if the head coach can do that and he's running the team, then great if he's got stability within the framework. But most of them don't have stability, and there's no plan for a player. We drafted Charles Haley in the fourth round. Nobody knew who the hell he was. But the minute he walked in the building, Walsh gave Bill McPherson a plan for what we were going to do with Haley. Here's the plan. And here's how we're going to develop his skills. It's the same thing we did with John Taylor, okay? And it's the same thing we did with every player that got drafted at the 49ers as long as Walsh was there. It had a specific player development plan that he crafted based on his evaluation, right? So, like, if I were working for a team, I would send all my stuff that, hey, here's where we think this is what Penix needs to work. This is the things we have to get. And you got to have milestones. Like he's got to achieve this the course of the year. Because if you're just sitting in there and he's just watching Kirk Cousins, there's no goal setting. There's no way. How do I know I'm improving? How am I getting better?
Yeah.
If you don't have that lined up, how are we getting anywhere? How are we making progress toward the ultimate goal? This is what's called second order thinking. Is anybody doing that down at Super Bowl winning championship city, Atlanta? I don't think so. They're just taking players. That's the difference. You're just taking players. Like, you know, there was a lot of consternation at the Raiders draft, a lot of it, right? A lot of people were, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's come out. They fired a lot of scouts in Las Vegas. So there's obviously a lot of people talking around the league about what actually was going on inside that draft room and what was happening. And, you know, Mark Davis was in the room and there was some conversations back and forth. Telesco's kind of he doesn't really talk to very many people in the building. And so there's a lot of kind of what's going on out there. And, you know, and that's a hard thing to do when you don't have communication. Like, how are we playing this player? You know, and Antonio Pierce is just, you know, he's just going to motivate that. His job is to motivate the team. It's a hard thing to do. You're competing against teams that have player development systems.
Well, so I want to get into that. There's a couple things I want to ask you, but this Raiders thing, it's interesting that you bring that up. I think most fans would be like, whoa, what's going on there? So is that a situation where Telesco and the scouts are not seeing eye to eye on the prospects, or they're not seeing eye to eye on the plan about how they go? Because like, they have their draft class. They're all sitting there in the war room. I'm not sure how many of the scouts are in the war room, but at least Telesco's in there saying, hey, look, this is what we're going to do. Is that just because
I think that was way too many. I don't think Telesco's talking to anybody from what I'm told. I think he's kind of very quiet. In fact, I was told that when they were having draft meetings that Telesco was in his office Zooming while the scouts were in the draft room. Okay. I know that sounds strange, but that's what I was told. I was also told that the scouts stayed through Sunday of the draft week and left Monday. And then the ones he fired, he never talked to them in person. He fired them on the phone on Tuesday. So I don't think he wants confrontation. And I think there's very few people that feel like he listens to it. Like, I'm sure he'll bring in his people. But Tom, I don't know Tom at all. But Tom's, you know, from what I'm told by the people that were in the room, and I think Mark Davis was one of those people that were confused about taking a tight end. And so, you know, it sounded like it was uncomfortable. Now, how are they going to make it work, right? How are they going to make it all work? We'll see. But Bowers, this is nothing. Again, Penix and Bowers are good players.
Yeah.
This is not about that conversation. This is about player development, team building, and how we're going to handle it. And I think, to me, if you talk to people that were there that are no longer there, you know, then I think there was a little bit. And it's natural, right? When you come into your first draft with a bunch of people that you didn't hire, it's a very challenging situation, right? And you've got a system of player procurement that was in Las Vegas that is completely different than the Bill Polian system that Tom Telesco grew up in. Completely different. You could not be any more opposite. You could not be any more opposite. And so, you know, I think that's a hard thing. And I think, you know, and somebody's got to bring this all together. But if the GM's not communicating with a lot of people, including the assistant GM, you know, he talks to very little people. They just basically, there was a lot of conversation in within the room. So I think that's the hard part. And this lends itself to player development. That's why we bring it up.
Well, I want to ask you, how does age factor into player development? Because is this a situation where the Falcons and maybe even the Broncos thought, hey, like, and the Broncos situation is a little bit different because I think Nix is going to be playing week one, would be my guess as of right now. But for Penix, was their thought process maybe, okay, he's played a lot of football, he's going to be 24, we think he's further along than your average rookie, say a McCarthy or a May, to where we don't need, I mean, like, they're not going to be ignoring him, but it's like, hey, we don't need to be like, maybe like a caretaker as if this was a 20, 21-year-old quarterback. Does that sort of factor into it a little bit here to where we feel comfortable having him sit behind Kirk because he's ready to go, 24 years old, and he can play if we need him to play in year one or in year two or maybe 4 or 5 years down the line, as Terry Fontenot said?
So it's marrying the system and the fundamentals and the techniques to the player's skill set. So right now, all Michael Penix knows is Caden DeBoer's fundamentals and mechanics within his system. And so now Zach Robinson has to come in and teach him what he wants within the framework of his system and those mechanics and fundamentals. Think of it as a golfer's swing, right? You have a certain swing that you went through at all of Texas and you played championship golf. But to win a championship, somebody said, look, that swing's not going to hold up, right? So we're going to have to change your swing a little bit. We have to make some of these alter modifications. And even though they're small changes, they take a long time to kind of get your brain to get honed in on exactly what has to happen because you're so used to doing it another way. And what I'm saying is if Robinson leaves in year two and Penix is sitting there, now he's going to learn another system of mechanics without the reps and reinforcement. Whereas Alex Smith was playing and Mahomes just generated right in.
Yeah.
There was a program of player development. People say, everybody uses this, well, let's wait a year. The waiting of the year is that's just wasted words. The waiting of the year doesn't mean anything. It's how are we, the year must be developed. From mechanics, fundamentals, classroom, field, time allotment. And it has to go from the day he walks in at rookie minicamp and all the way through next offseason. And there has to be milestones on how to get the player better. And if that doesn't occur, then you're just hoping the guy turns into be a good player.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like school in a sense. It's like you have these, like you're graded.
It is exactly
and you're doing
school,
that.
Yeah. And you need and when you go to school, what happens when you go to school? You have a teacher has a plan, a teaching plan.
Yep.
That's what I'm trying to get to. Does Terry, Super Bowl winning GM Fontenot, have a teaching plan for the quarterback? Or he's going to rely on Zach Robinson, right? And then who's monitoring the teaching plan? Yep. Who's grading the teaching plan? Who's making sure? So that has to all work in harmony. And if you're not communicating with everybody, if everybody doesn't understand it, like you got to have somebody, and if Zach Robinson leaves, oh, we're fucked.
On the other side, we're going to wrap things up here on the DraftKings Network, but the podcast audience, hang with us. I want to ask Michael about what happens when these plans fail and how it impacts these players and their careers moving forward. And we'll get into some other coaching news as well here on the GM Shuffle. The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. I mean, the second round of the playoffs have been absolutely phenomenal, and if you really like a team, you can bet on them for the futures markets, maybe some conference finals MVPs as the conference finals approach, or how about NBA finals MVP? And if you're new to DraftKings, you gotta check this out. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code SHUFFLE, that's code SHUFFLE, for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5 only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available. For problem gambling, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. You know, this conversation, Michael, is fascinating because player development is something that never gets talked about in the media. We just talk about, like you said, acquiring players and stacking rosters together and let's go play a game in the fall. But when we have this conversation, I sort of think to myself, are more, especially quarterbacks, are more guys kind of ruined because of a lack of a plan than we give credit for? Because, I mean, if you lay it out how this is and you get that kind of mix and match, offensive coordinators, oh, he's been on four OCs in the 5 years. Like, it feels like that can sometimes kind of ruin guys by having that lack of continuity. Do you think that's sort of what happens when some of these guys just turn out, they don't turn out how we think they should, at least coming out of the draft?
Yeah, and I think it applies to all positions. And I think what ultimately happens, Femi, is if a guy can be really good on his own, then, you know, he comes to the top. But sometimes guys get lost in the shuffle. And, you know, the coach, you know, a guy doesn't pick up the system quick enough, or the guy's just not in shape. You know, there's certain things that happen, and then they get discarded. And then they go somewhere else, and you're like, how did that guy – they cut that guy. Now he's somewhere else, you know, and now he's a good player. And I think that's ultimately what happens. You know, and as on the quarterbacks, look, I think Zach Wilson never had a look, I'm not blaming. I think Zach Wilson's, you've heard me talk about that enough, but like, just take Zach Wilson. There's really no plan on how he was going to become a player. There was no fun. I mean, he never improved his fundamentals or his mechanics. There was nothing. It was just go, you play, right? You know, and no dressing them up. Same thing with a lot of these guys, you know, like, some guys, you have to understand, the autopsy has to be declared, right? Did Josh Rosen failed because of why, right? EJ Manuel failed because of why. See, if you're the Super Bowl winning GM, Terry Fontenot, you should know every single reason a quarterback failed, right? Jamarcus Russell failed. By the way, I wasn't involved with Jamarcus Russell, even though people want to blame me for it. You know, lazy, was never going to work hard, was always out at the club, you know, yada, yada. There's reasons, okay? It wasn't talent, right? And so, like, when you're sitting down with all the quarterbacks, you draft one, you got to sit there the first day, you know, you should go over it. Here's the reality of the position you play in the National Football League. And here's the things you can overcome, and here's what you can't overcome. Like, if you're just not good enough, if we've missed on your talent and your ability to play the position, then that's on us. But if we miss because you don't work hard or do these things, that's on you. Mm-hmm. See, I don't think the Jets missed on Zach Wilson's talent. I really don't. Right? I think they missed on the player development as work ethic. Yes. You know, Justin Fields, I don't know if I think his talent in terms of an athlete, they didn't miss on. In terms of playing the position, I think they did, even though they got an A+ from Pro Football Focus in that draft. Right? So I think to me, that's what has to be evaluated. And if there's not a specific plan and you say, well, that's why Justin Fields failed because he had a plan. No, he failed because he never had a plan, but he also wasn't going to be talented enough within the plan in terms of playing the position of quarterback, throwing the football effectively, mechanically. When he came out in the draft, Brady made the comment, his mechanics aren't good. I read it somewhere, right? His elbow, he is loose, his elbow's all over. And if you don't change his mechanics or get to those, it's never going to change itself. But somebody's got to be the driver of that. Somebody's got to be able to say, here's what we're doing.
Yeah. And
it can't be the position coach. It can't. That would be like somebody working at middle management making corporate decisions. You just can't.
It makes it difficult. And it's because why it's – I always think back to when these guys get drafted. Like you said, in Zach Wilson's case, it's like at some point along the way, people thought that he could play. Like, is he really this poor? And this is not to absolve him of all of it, because you've talked about the work ethic stuff and all the other things that maybe he could have helped to attribute into playing a little bit better. But it's not – I don't think it's just all on him. But then conversely, as we'll get into this other kind of conversation that what we saw from our favorite NBA analyst Charles Barkley talk about, it's not all just on the coaches as well. Because I think in the NFL, the dynamics are really interesting. But if you haven't heard the clip, we're going to play it for you guys right now, courtesy of Inside the NBA. This is Charles Barkley talking about the Los Angeles Lakers and the Phoenix Suns and their playoff failures of this past week.
Part of our job, we watch all the games and we watch all the talk shows. You know, a lot of these people on television, they're cowards because they want the players to like them. They don't want to do their job, which is to tell the truth. And I just want to say this about coaching. Anybody who thinks the reason the Lakers suck is because of Darvin Ham or the reason the Suns suck is because of Frank Vogel, you don't know what you're talking about. Frank Vogel is a hell of a coach. Darvin Ham is a hell of a coach trying to get his career started. But for all you punks, idiots, and jackasses on other networks who want to be media and who want all the players to like y'all, do your damn job. The Lakers suck, and the Suns suck because of the players. Has nothing to do with the coaches.
I mean, it's only the way Charles puts it.
We don't have enough of that. People don't understand that the food chain here. What he's talking about is the food chain. Okay, what he's really addressing is the food chain. Most people need information from a coach or an executive to go on television. They need that coach to tell them what they're doing or what they're thinking, and then they spew it out. And so they're never going to spew out information that would be negative towards the person giving them, because it would be their lifeline. They would be killing themselves.
Yeah.
See, Barkley doesn't need to call anybody on the phone to voice to say an opinion. He could care less. He watches, he gives his opinion. So he is truly no filter. But we have so many of them that get on there that have to, hey, tell me what I should say about this, or what do you think about this? And so, you know, you get certain, even coaches, like you would think, like somebody who's been a head coach in the league who works for a major network and sits on a Sunday night show would have thousands of opinions, but they don't, because they call people and they ask them and then they spew, because they're either trying to get another job, or B, they're just protecting their friends.
Yeah.
Or they need that information to be able to sound smart. And that's the problem. We have none of this. And so what he's right. I mean, like if you watch the NBA and if you're a GM in football, you clearly see that the older players are dying late in the year and they just don't have the same zip to them. And you've got to stay young. And that's a delicate balance of staying young and being competitive as opposed to going old. All old players, and I think Brett Veach does a great job, but what he said about Travis Kelce, yeah, he looks like he's 30. He doesn't look 36 yet. This is May. He'll look great in August too, but in November he's going to look 38, not 36. He's going to look 40. It's going to be hard for him. It's just human nature. It's not anything about Kelce. I think Kelce's are incredible, but that's going to be a hard thing to maintain. No one beats Father Time, not Brady. You know, that's it. So I think to me, that's really that's the driving force. And that's why when you read stuff that's coming from executives or coaches, it's what they want to be put out. So they're always in the positive light. And that's why most of the media darlings, the people that get promoted, end up never being great.
Yeah, it's interesting because the NBA dynamic is a little bit different than the NFL dynamic, because NBA, the players have a little bit more control under who, if a star player walks into the GM's office and says, hey, fire this coach or I'm going to ask for a trade, the coach is going to get fired. That's just how it works. NFL is a little bit different. It's not like that. There's some other CBA and cap constraints that don't allow you to do those types of things. But it's something that we've talked about here on the pod about how you always say the general manager has the owner's ear more than the head coach. And the GM could be up there saying, hey, he's not coaching my guys up. Like, we got to make a change to kind of almost protect their own ass. Because it's one big game of cover your ass. It's like you're trying to figure out, hey, it's not my fault in this blame game, because the blame pie is out there anytime you fall short of expectations. And in the NFL, it's more so maybe the coach gets thrown under the bus, just given the fact that the general manager is up there while the coach is out there watching tape or trying to coach practice or grinding. They're not really up in the owner's ear at dinner or during the games, what have you.
No question. And then the new coach comes in, but he comes in with no real answers on what went wrong, because it was always the coach's fault. So you fire the coach and you really don't have the answer on what went wrong. And so, like, here's where the guy, like, what went wrong with this player? Why did this player fail? What was wrong with this guy? You know, and you blame the coach, and it's easy to blame that. Sometimes it is the coach's fault. Guy's not getting developed, but you have to come to the point where you say to yourself, look, this guy isn't good enough, no matter how much we coach him.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it comes full circle what we talked about. If there's no clear plan, it's hard to go ahead and say, hey, this guy didn't get this done because the coach didn't coach this up properly. You got to have a plan at first. Then you can kind of go out and evaluate from there and find the true terms of the autopsy. So to put a bow on this entire discussion, we do have some fun betting markets at our show sponsor, DraftKings, to just to say who will be the quarterback to take the week one snap. We wanted to focus in on these teams that have these rookies. Bo Nix right now for the Broncos, big favorite, minus 300 to be the quarterback to play the first week one snap. Jarrett Stidham, plus 330. Zach Wilson is at 9-1. But the interesting ones are the Minnesota Vikings, where it's Sam Darnold at minus 160, J.J. McCarthy plus 120. So as of right now, slight lead for Darnold, but kind of a coin flip situation. And then Drake May is a big dog. He's plus 350, while Jacoby Brissett is minus 550. Do any of those interest you in terms of being the quarterback to take the first week one snap for their respective team?
Well, let's go through it, right? So I think, to me, I don't think that J.J. McCarthy is going to be able to beat out Sam Darnold. I don't think that's going to happen, right? And so I think J.J. McCarthy, Drake May are kind of, they're going to have to do it, whether they can get to October, whether they have to wait a year. But it's going to be hard for them based on the level of play, learning the system, and beating somebody who's the incumbent. Brissett knows what to do. He'll get them lined up, and he'll make them competitive. So I think that's the case. I think Nix is clearly going to be the day one starter because he's ready to play, and Sean's got so much involved in him that he's got to make him good. So he'll do that, you know. And I think that same thing with Jaden Daniels. Unless he gets injured, he's there because Marcus Mariota is not going to be the guy. And the same thing with Caleb Williams. So to me, the only one that's risk taking a shot on would be McCarthy at plus 120. I just don't see that. I think I would rather play. I think Sam Darnold gives them a better chance. And I think Minnesota, they're, you know, Minnesota isn't ready to just go with a young player. I think they signed Darnold with a plan. I think they're going to make Darnold try to make him. And obviously the fans are going to want him to not be the starter once he throws the first interception in week one. But the reality of it is it's going to take McCarthy. Remember this, volume is the killer of everything. Okay, so the volume that you get, see, what happens here is the volume of offense that is going to be required for Kirk Cousins is no chance that Michael Penix can adapt it. It's just no chance. The volume of offense that's going to be required for Minnesota to play on opening day is not going to be able, J.J. McCarthy's going to have a hard time handling all that. And the volume of offense for Bo Nix is going to be tailored for Bo Nix because he's the day one starter. Same thing. So they're going to scale it down in Washington. They're going to scale it down in Denver. They're going to scale it down in Chicago. Whereas in New England, they don't want to scale it down. They want to put their system in. Mm-hmm. And same thing in Minnesota, right? They want to get it going. And so you have two diametrically different programs. And it's hard to get a young player to handle all that volume and still go out there and play well.
Yeah, no, there's some other interesting ones. Seattle is an interesting one. Geno Smith and Sam Howell. Right now, Geno Smith minus 330, Howell plus 225. Of course, the Seahawks trading with the Commanders to bring him in. But Seattle's an interesting pivot point for this conversation because I always think back to that 2012 rookie camp, and then you see Russell Wilson, and the stuff that you heard out of that camp as somebody who lived up in that area during that time is like, hey, this guy is a little bit further ahead of schedule than we thought. Hey, this guy is actually in a real competition with the quarterback that we just signed off of the street in Matt Flynn. Like, when do you know that a guy is ready to play, even if sometimes it comes ahead of schedule, as Russell Wilson was going from maybe being second or third string quarterback to all of a sudden being week one starter as a third round pick?
You know, based on the program of player development, like when Mac Jones became the starter in New England over Cam Newton, you know, he proved it when he was at the Giants, when they practiced against the Giants. I think he was like 37 for 40 and completed passes. But Mac Jones is the perfect example of all the things we're talking about. Came in, had a program, player development. It worked. Josh McDaniels did a really good job, developed him, got him going. And then, you know, it kind of fell apart. It kind of fell apart for a lot of different reasons, some of it coaching, some of it players, some of it scheme, but it did. And ultimately, when that player development didn't continue and you made the change, like what I'm talking about, if Zach Robinson leaves Penix, like what happened in New England, all of a sudden it falls apart. So the plan has to be in place. And when there's a plan, you can see it. I just don't see how they're going to be able to do that in Minnesota, or clearly they're not going to do it in New England. I mean, in Houston, it was different because they had planned it, right? And so the offense was scaled. Because if you watch the first preseason game, you're thinking there's no way Stroud's going to – he couldn't even throw it. The first pass he threw was in the dirt. It was brutal.
Yeah.
But they kept the system scaled down for him, and they grew with him. There was no alternative. When there's no alternative, you got to do it, right?
It was out of necessity, and then he ends up having one of the great rookie seasons of all time there, being Offensive Rookie of the Year. So I'm sure it'll be a pleasant surprise in Minnesota or New England or one of these spots if those guys are ready to play, but chances are that they're likely going to be sitting week one, and then we'll kind of see how things progress throughout the regular season. Last thing that you wanted to hit was in Minnesota with Bud Grant and what they're doing, some cool stuff they're doing at the Vikings organization.
Yeah, I mean, I read about it. We wrote about it on the Daily Coach today, and I think it's the perfect example of how you build culture within an organization. And the Will family, who never worked with Bud Grant ever, but he was a legacy there, was four Super Bowls, never won a Super Bowl, had a great career in Canada. Interesting man, if you read it on the Daily Coach, but they kept his office in place. Like, and even though he's no longer with us, he died at 93 years old, his office is still there to let people know that they honor the past. I think that's really good. And when we live in this world where we have so many people trying to take credit for the success, you know, you lose touch of your culture. You know, you lose touch of identifying the people that you belong to, because most of these kids, including Kevin O'Connell, I'm sure, and, you know, and everybody that's in Minnesota think Bud Grant, they don't know who Bud Grant was. They don't probably know who Bob Schnelker was, Jerry Burns, some of the great coaches that they had in Minnesota that Bud hired. You know, they just know he was an old guy that didn't the cold never bothered him because he, you know, he wore short sleeve shirts. But he's part of the legacy of the franchise and the fabric of the franchise, which is the culture that the Wolf family is trying to instill. And I think it's really great. I think it's tremendous. Meanwhile, we're watching, you know, that the infomercial about the Patriots, and they're dismissing a coach that won six games, and they're talking about how great their culture is.
Did you see the zinger that Belichick put in there on the roast last night?
I saw it's that on Twitter good. This morning.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's anybody who wants to call it a documentary, I refer to it as an infomercial. It truly is an infomercial.
Yeah, I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure you've seen it. But in case you haven't, Bill Belichick last night said, "It's an honor to be at the roast of Tom Brady on Netflix tonight. It's not to be confused with the 10-part Bill Belichick roast during the Apple TV documentary." Like, that's a hell of a line. A future in comedy for Belichick, maybe. That's a really good line there that he put.
He is a funny guy.
That's pretty good stuff. I'm glad we're starting to see it. You know, we're starting to see it now. So it's one of the cool benefits. I'm sure he'd love to be coaching, and we obviously would love to see him coach, but this side of him is fun to see as well, because those of us on the outside don't get to see it. I'm sure you've seen it, but those of us were learning about what he's all about. Quick programming note, though, we'll be back on Thursday. We didn't get a chance to get to our 2021 draft grades. We're doing that Thursday. There was a lot that we wanted to discuss today that was more timely. So 2021 draft grades, Thursday's pod. We have them all up here. We got them. We're going to dive into this thing deep here for 2021, that class, because now all the fifth-year options have been declared. 18 of those guys from the first round got fifth-year options. We'll break it all down on Thursday's pod, as we'll be back here later on in the week. So, as always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Thank you to our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos. Michael, I will see you on Thursday for another edition of this bad boy.
And I will see you. I'll be in the office today. We're doing GM Shuffle. We're doing the show together.
Yes, sir.
So, looking forward to it.
See you
in an hour. Thank
you, Femi. All right.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.